That's so interesting.
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, that is very interesting. Please tell me more.
Very interesting.
Marty, that was very interesting.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to That's So Interesting, the podcast where we discuss what we think are objectively interesting things. I'm Graham, and today we're going to be taking a dive into climate change, what's heating up on the topic we're going to hopefully bring to you. And with me, as always, are Brian and Brandon. Almost got your names mixed up there. Fellas, how are you doing?
Doing good. I see what you did there on the heating up. Quite topical.
Oh, foreshadowing. I like it.
You got it.
Everything's good on my end. How about yourself, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm good. Life's good. Can't really complain. Summertime's nice. It's nice being in Edmonton in the summertime. Like, I didn't really think about the daylight hours. Like, the past couple days, Christina and I have gotten to get up at, like, 5-ish in the morning. And it's, like, broad daylight.
Oh.
And then, you know, we'll go to bed at, like, 9:30. And it's still daylight out. And it's light out until, like, 10:30, 11 o'clock. It's crazy. Because you always hear these stories of being up north of, like,
that's amazing.
You know, Alaska, they only have 2 hours of darkness at some point in the year, and you don't really think about it because, like, you think Alaska is just so far north. But yeah, it's pretty crazy being here. And it's still, right until July 21st, going to get, the days are going to keep getting longer. So it's fun.
Crazy.
It makes up for the darkness in the wintertime.
Yeah, it's sweet. Yeah, the summer solstice is amazing.
Yeah.
Something that's sort of bothering me, though, the folks I'm renting from, despite specifically saying that there was AC, have now said that the only way we're getting AC is to contact the rental company for them to install a single window unit.
Wait, the folks you're renting from? You mean your own parents?
No, he moved.
Oh.
No, we sold the house and moved. In like 2 months ago, sorry, life update. But yeah, like I'm just on a traditional rental contract now, and I don't want to say they lied, but they didn't tell the truth.
You're nice if you say that they didn't lie.
AC is definitely underrated.
Yeah,
100%.
It's just tough because it's literally the one thing I wanted this summer. Like, I would have been fine to just, like, use data or, you know, not, you know, do a whole lot at home in that, you know, online world as long as I had AC. And here I am with the freaking oscillating fan behind me trying to speak into my mic and not sweat to death.
Hey, did you go tower fan or traditional, like, circle blade fan?
Oh,
this is a tower fan. I needed
that surface. Your experience area, with that,
in my opinion, at least psychologically. Yeah, that was my play call. But do you guys have a strong preference on fans?
Circle fan.
Oh, you're a circle guy.
Absolutely.
What's, why?
The noise is so much nicer. It's like it resembles white noise.
And there's more less of a natural sounding noise.
Yeah, and less like. My folks have a handful of plastic ones back home because they just got AC, but before they didn't. And so the house would always have fans going, but it would, like, they would creak, you know, the plastic rubs together after a while if you're, you know, making them rotate a little too often. It's just so much more to break down.
And you can do that cool robot.
Oh, that is my favorite. I still do that.
I'm just saying, it's a big win, so I can totally.
When
totally
Shannon's at work and I'm just at home alone, I talk to the fan. Hello, Brian.
Some people ask Siri or Alexa odd things. Brian's just talking to himself.
Talking to the fan. It's good to have fans in your life.
You got to make sure you keep the fans happy.
You got to keep the fans happy. That's true.
Right on. But yeah, fans, it's hot out, pretty objectively speaking, or at least for those climate change believers. The world is
wait, what do you mean believers?
Warming up.
You mean the people that believe in science? Oh, okay.
Science, yes. Yeah, thank you for translating for our listeners, Brian. Yeah, thanks. Sometimes I'm a little too diplomatic on these things.
I feel like we're past the point of... Oh, you know, it's okay that you don't believe in climate change. It's like, no, this is real. You know, it's like if you don't understand what's happening to the earth, like I don't know how you can be that ignorant.
Which is, and it's why the U.S. is still such a joke right now. Like, no offense to anyone down there, but it's just because of your leadership right now, pretty much, you know, excluding themselves from all international and global efforts to save the world, right? Like, there have been so many different peer-reviewed evidence-based studies that are giving, admittedly, you know, varying timelines, but those timelines all lead to the irreversible, you know, decline of our Earth. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What place are you guys most worried about? Like, are you worried about some place flooding that you'll never get back, or some place eroding off into the ocean? Like, what's going to be impacted?
I mean, I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before when we were talking about the Starbucks straws.
Yeah.
And the environment, but definitely the one thing that my mom is most worried about is Richmond, where I grew up. Richmond.
Thank you.
Where our family is now. It's below sea level, and it's an island, and the island is built of silt. So there's a couple fears. The first one is that with the rising sea levels, Richmond gets basically drowned and is going to be completely underwater within the next century. Like, I don't think that's too far to the question. So that's the first fear, is that if the sea levels keep rising. The other fear is that if there's an earthquake of any kind, which I don't know if this is too much affected by climate change, but if there's an earthquake, the fear is that because it's not solid rock, that the entire island will just dissolve. Like, it'll be...
Like Thanos
style? Not like Thanos style. Like, if you're... You know, like when you're panning for gold and you have to put it through this, like, rock strainer first, and you kind of shake the sand and water and everything kind of just falls through like a sieve.
Yeah.
That's kind of what would happen to Richmond.
Yeah, the rocks. No. Rock strainer. You had it with rock strainer. Go on.
I can't tell you're being serious. But anyways, that's exactly what would happen. The island would just dissolve if it was shaken up. So I think those are kind of the biggest fears. Like, my hometown could literally be gone.
That's wild.
Within the next century.
Yeah.
Like, the entire city could be gone.
Yeah. Yeah, which is terrible, right? I think one of the things that's just overall concerning for me, and like really it's just the lifestyle of the more equatorial countries, it's just the overall like temperature and climate of where we all live eventually, right? Like, it just rising temperatures everywhere. Like, people will be able to be less and less active for increasingly shorter amounts of time outside, increased protection required just from the sun in theory. All those just major lifestyle changes where, like, your life will just be different regardless of, you know, where you live or any
100%. I'm already wearing SPF 60. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I need more SPFs.
SPFs is what we call them. No problem.
SPFs. Yeah, excuse me. Thanks, Brad.
Tough. I mean, you mentioned, like, just things getting warmer. You know, one of the biggest problems in the Atlantic, or the Atlantic Ocean, or even the Gulf of Mexico, or anywhere in the kind of Atlantic islands, is hurricanes are getting a lot worse because the water level, the water temperature in the ocean is getting warmer. And they say that the warmer the water gets, the more severe the hurricanes get. Like, they've had a lot more Category 5 hurricanes in the last 10 years or whatever than they've had in the last two centuries, just because of how much warmer the water is, and it's just causing so much more damage to all these countries and all these nations, and that's purely because the water's warmer, because the planet's warming up.
Yeah, it's pretty...
No, I was going to say, something else going on with the Great Barrier Reef, because the water temperature is so warm?
You read my mind!
The UVs, there's not enough spiffs to go around. I believe it's the water and the ecological system can't balance itself out, and it's not having the right amount of bacteria and chemicals. And something along those lines, which is essentially continuing to make the Great Barrier Reef not be able to reproduce corals, and then
corals dying
because of the elevated heat, it's killing off corals. And so they, like, scientists have no idea how to save this thing currently, and they're like, it's pretty much on the brink of extinction from what I have read.
Yeah, and that's in part to you're talking about not enough spiffs, Brian. Also, yes. Too many spiffs, because from what I understand, a lot of the damage is from humans wearing the inappropriate type of sunscreen that actually damages the entire, like,
interesting. I didn't know that
there, right? But yeah, from what I understand, it's actually, like, really quite destructive, and so you do have to look for specific sunscreens that are removing or have isolated the specific chemical or damaging factor to the reefs and really in any water setting, you know. So, like, it's applicable anywhere. It's just the reef is a great massive and tragic example of
it's such a tourist destination, right? Like, everyone knows about it from pictures or whatnot, but nobody really cares about, say, Lake Simcoe seaweed, right, of that being impacted, or something that humans find disgusting or gross. I think, like, what do you guys think the turning point for humans, or, like, trying to convince friends, peers, family members? We all have that random family member at holiday parties that, you know, likes to say the offside comments, whether they truly believe them or not. What do you say to them to try to convince them that we should try to act now?
Well, I think my initial comment is, great question, and I don't do that. And I think that's part of maybe the problem on some level, at least in my little tiny sphere, just because it's not something that I do. And so how do we, I guess, continue that dialogue and that conversation to be less of a bystander about those situations? And when we do believe in something passionately like this, what can we do to actually make meaningful difference and change attitudes, right? To actually change the effect of attitudes.
I guess it's similar to a lot of sales things, right? You're trying to sell somebody on a different way of living, and you kind of have to sell the advantages of living a certain way that's going to be better for the environment. Right. So if it's, you know, reducing the amount of time they're driving, then maybe you're promoting the health benefits of walking, or the mindfulness benefits of being able to get out and walk and enjoy fresh air. Or maybe you're, you know, we're talking about the savings benefits of, you know, going to a place like a Bulk Barn or one of those bulk grocery stores and, you know, saving on the packaging, and then therefore not throwing out or reducing your waste. Or, you know, maybe it's if somebody has a home, maybe it's, you know, talking about the idea of possibly starting to compost food waste instead of throwing it in the garbage. Mm-hmm. Like, little things like that. I think that's probably the best way about doing it, is selling them on the benefits of how it can enrich their life. Because now you're not talking about, oh, do this because you're saving the planet. No, do this because it's also going to improve your life and enrich the way that you do things. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, I remember seeing a quote. It was like, we don't need a few people to be 100% better. We need everybody, you know, 100% of people to be 1% better. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think it's just about everybody trying to make small little changes in their lives to help the environment. And, I mean, it's tough. Like, nobody can be perfect. But if, you know, everyone's striving to make incremental changes and little steps to make a difference, then it goes a long way. And, you know, just think about, everything you're doing is just slowing down the inevitable death of our planet by a little bit and a little bit and a little bit.
That's so interesting. I read
where
there's, like, a quote going around from a professor on, like, in regarding more mental health perspectives, but I think it's super applicable here, of anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And so, like, the thought process behind that, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but, like, the examples that the professor had given was, you know, there are some days where you don't really want to do what you need to do, but it's worth doing them poorly than not at all. For example, you know, brushing your teeth is good for your health for many different benefits. So it's better to brush them for 20 seconds than not at all. or it's better to go outside and go for a 10-minute walk than an hour walk, or than not doing it at all, even though you know you should be doing it for an hour. Like things like that, it's better to study a little bit than not at all. And I think in this, from this perspective, it's the same of, you know, if you can compost, if you can recycle here, if you can ask for your food to be packaged in your own container instead of, you know, the takeout container, styrofoam container that's provided, and you do that 3 out of every 10 times, that's still having a big impact on the world than just not doing it at all.
Yeah, 100% agree. That's also really what I needed to hear, because I was definitely sold on not going for a run today. But you saying that, anything worth doing? What is it? Anything worth doing?
Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Is worth doing poorly. You know, like,
I think
I've got a race in 8 days and I was going to not run today. But you know what? Maybe I will. I will get out and do a 5-6K just to go.
Or
just
because I need to. Do a 2K. Do a 1K. It don't matter.
Yeah, it's true.
It don't
maintenance
matter.
Training.
It's true.
Maintenance training.
It's a good point.
It's something that is sort of bugs me. Like, just going back to the conversation of everyone needing to chip in. Just, I think, even processes that I think people and we as a population and country think, like, oh, no, like, we got that, so we can look elsewhere in terms of improving ourselves and the environment. Like, something like recycling. So according to government officials, we successfully recycle 11% of recycling waste, right? So all of that other 89% of that, all of the stuff in your blue bin is just also going to the landfill. And that to me is obviously problematic, but I don't know. It just, so many things have to change, right? It's sort of overwhelming in terms of where you start. So that's why I like the message of, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly, because, you know, at least you can maybe focus just on recycling and look to improve that rather than I don't know, trying to expand your range or your impact. Absolutely. In a whole bunch of different ways without getting any of them right.
It's interesting. I was just thinking, like, I think sometimes maybe we think that the government needs to be doing more in terms of their impact on doing better for the environment, but I'm not even sure if that's true. Like, you know, there's all this talk about the House putting through a bill to eliminate all single-use plastics by 2021 or whatever, right? And it's like, we don't necessarily need the government to do that. We can do that on our own, right? By choosing different alternatives of purchasing products, right? Or like we've talked about in the past, you know, not getting a straw, or, you know, just little things like that. You know, we can already go ahead and do that. We don't need to wait for the government to put in a law or a bill to make it true.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, we need to, I think that we underestimate often how much of a capitalist society we live in, and that, like, I even experience it from the food and bev industry of when you can save 4% on your cost of goods for, say, a takeout order, because you can order styrofoam over environmentally friendly or like sugarcane plastic or sugarcane material that can biodegrade in the landfill. Like, most companies are so tight or think that they're so tight because they don't want to increase their prices, will always elect for the cheaper option. Yeah. And based off of mass producing and everybody also trying to save, even these big companies that can afford it, it's cheaper for everybody to go plastic and the single use, whether that's styrofoam, plastic, etc., than to look into having more sustainable options. And in some part, I think social change can happen and bring social awareness of the impacts that these organizations or their products are having on our environment. And that is one landscape. But the other is, honestly, like, the government actually stepping in and saying, like, we need to change this. And yes, Canada isn't the highest polluter in the world. Yes, we are a lot better than other nations. But at the same time, we're also economically better off than many other nations in the world. And from a education perspective and a open research from university institutions and private and public entities, we're far better off, and we need to take this information and actually push for legitimate change. But is it like our single-use straws the answer to, you know, changing the environmental impact? Well, no, but it's a start. But at the same time, we can't do that like we discussed on the last one with Starbucks. It's like you still need to be mindful of accessibility issues and making sure that people are able to feel comfortable in their environment and not feel shamed for doing what they need to do to survive. Example, somebody who needs a straw to be able to drink. Like, use your straw. I'm not going to judge you.
Totally. Yeah, I think it does. I think it's important to reiterate how impactful the government can be, Brian, to build off your point. I think a lot of the debate, both in Canada and south of the border right now, in terms of candidates and jockeying for position in the political landscape, is built around environmental policy, right? We have different parties and representatives on the spectrum of, you know, right versus left wing, who, you know, are garnering a lot of different support depending which side they fall on. And a lot of that is going to sway the direction that either country goes in terms of their actual policy and choices made, right? Like we just saw in Oregon, the Republican, I'm going to get this wrong, but like Republican House representatives walked out and fled. They fled to Idaho to avoid being present when the voting was to happen for a cap and trade law that would severely limit, you know, business or Republican values, but also improve, you know, the environment in all its values on that side, right? And so we're having people literally avoid making quorum in the name of limiting environmental conservation, which, like, is, I think, is pretty,
it's insane. And like, if you look at Canada and US governments, for I always like to use us from a Western perspective, the creation of our governments from a democratic spot wasn't like, isn't to limit what people can and can't do, but it's to look out for the greater good of society. And
yes,
is making sure that society is able to continue on with their, like, repopulation, many generations to come, safety, security of food resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is that not in the best interest of the society? Well, yes. But the government doesn't want to get involved because they're also getting millions and millions of dollars behind the scenes from from private entities to fund, like, look at the oil and gas industry, for example. They knew in like the 1960s that carbon emissions from gas, whether that's from actually extracting it from the earth or people just using it in their cars, was detrimental to our earth and was going to create negative climate impacts. They knew that, like, the president of the West or the North American Society of, like, Oil and Gas, I don't know the exact name of this company, actually talked about it at their annual general meeting, saying this is a risk that we need to be aware of and look at solutions. And ever since then, everybody went hush hush and are trying to convince people that all of this research isn't real, instead of flipping the script and going, okay, let's change to alternative sources of energy. And I think that's crazy. Like,
yeah,
blows my mind. That,
it's such a good example of just how twisted and self-centered humans can be, right? Like, that's ultimately what it is. You're willing to sacrifice the long-term well-being of the planet. Right, like, you're not talking about even just a vulnerable population or a specific country that you're just giving the finger to. We're just talking about good old planet Earth, and that's something that you're not willing to make a change for.
Yeah, and I don't even care what you like, what you love. Like, it could be your neighbor, it could be your family, it could be your dog, it could be whatever. Like, you are preventing you are literally having such a negative impact on your family or on the things that you love that they will not exist in X amount of years.
Have you guys seen an Inconvenient Sequel on Netflix?
No.
Graham?
Oh, I have not.
So you guys know The Inconvenient Truth? Al Gore's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did a follow-up. And basically it revisits his original documentary, but like 10-ish years later. And it's quite interesting because he goes back on all of the things he said that would happen in 10 years. And, you know, all the statements that he made that people thought he would be crazy, like the site of the Twin Tower attack in New York, he said it would flood and people were like, that's crazy. And then he showed footage of that hurricane they had, or that storm, Hurricane Sandy, I believe it was, in the New York area, where the Ground Zero was flooding, or the streets of Miami flooding, and like all this stuff. But they actually highlighted a scenario towards the end of the documentary where they were in a meeting with the president of India, and they were trying to get them to change the way that India was going to develop in the next 100 years. So India was talking about, or the president was talking about, how as a country, in order to develop infrastructure and basically catch up to the Western worlds, they needed to burn coal.
Mm-hmm.
As a way to develop, you know, mass amounts of energy, because it's cheap and it provides them with energy and it provides them, yeah, basically with industry. And Al Gore and his team were trying to have meetings with the president to say, look, you know, this is going to have a massive impact on the planet, and, you know, maybe it helps India develop, but, you know, the ramifications towards global warming for the entire population could be massive. And, you know, the president kind of responds that, you know, who are you to tell us how to develop our country? Like, you guys are already in a, you know, quote unquote first world state, where you have all of these, you know, all of this infrastructure already in place. You've already developed using coal. You've already burned all these fossil fuels. You've already done your damage to the planet to get to where you guys are now. Right? He's like, without us being able to burn coal as our fuel source, we can't develop as a country at the rate that we need to develop. Because India is developing as a population so rapidly, they need to be able to develop infrastructure just as quickly. And they can't do that with renewable energy because they don't have the infrastructure in place. So it's kind of an interesting situation. Like, you know, how do you stop a country from developing just to save the planet, but in them not being able to develop, you know, could greatly hinder their population's quality of life.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to have the transportation needs that they need. They're not going to have the infrastructure needs that they need to survive as a country. So,
and that's the thing.
No, it's just quite interesting to see. Like, you know, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Canada is a country that's wealthy and in a position to make changes on our own, but, you know, other countries aren't necessarily in the same situation that we are, right? They aren't at the technological age that we are. They're not at the industrial age that we are.
Correct.
You know, it's a different situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. Like, I agree that it's a super complicated and challenging issue to tackle. And I think it sort of circles back to just the broader conversation of what are you willing to sacrifice for the survival of the planet? And by that, I mean on both sides, right? So in this example, India has the choice of how they will industrialize. Technically, it's a choice. And then on the flip side, developed first world nations have the choice, potentially, you know, in theory, on maybe how they can provide foreign aid to support these countries, which, yes, might absolutely negatively impact their domestic economy. But are you willing to make that sacrifice for the survival and continuing existence of the human species and planet Earth?
And for Brandon, I think my response to that, like, so two things. One is, I think what people, most people don't know is, I believe the stat is like 10 plus coal mines a day are opening in India. Something along those lines, like a catastrophic amount to produce the amount of energy that they need.
Right.
Like, yeah, I think it's something crazy like that. I remember one of my friends from the environment faculty telling me that. And so it like really, really stuck out of like, holy shit, like, this is crazy. But the thing that I wish we did more as a country is acknowledged our past. And we haven't really done that. And especially when, at least publicly with other nations, of being like, we really screwed up as a country or as a Western world of investing in all of our industrial revolution tactics. Because look at what the mess we have in now. If you don't invest in, or if we don't even help you invest in green technology, we're all going down the same route that we just were in. And it's impossible to get out of, as what we're seeing right now in the Trans Mountain Pipeline, like with Canada, of your full society is committed to using oil and gas and coal for energy sources. And however many millions or billions of cars are made, right? You can't suddenly just tell everybody trade them in for an electric vehicle, because that's not going to happen. People don't have that kind of money. And use cars and so on and so forth, product life cycle. Same with the way that we're developing heating our homes or lighting our barbecues or, you know, powering our plants. Like, all of these things on such a mass scale are hurting our environment. And we don't do a good enough job, I think, and I haven't really seen it at all, of explaining that to other nations, of saying, we really screwed up. Like, let us provide financial support, guidance, technology, investment, whatever that may be, to help you get to the point where you're going to be able to invest in the right resources for our world, and hopefully help your economy along the way, as opposed to making decisions now that you're going to look back on in 20 years and be like, oh, we really screwed this up.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, it's good in theory, but then you look at, you know, the United States, for example. One of the reasons that they've opted out of all of these bills is because they're trying to work on their own internal finances.
Yo, you're absolutely
like, that government, that country is in so much debt that, you know, I'm not, you know, one of the reasons may be that they don't believe in the actual climate change, but, you know, the other thing is that it's costing them too much money, and they've opted out of these bills in order to save costs, because they can't afford to support, they can't afford to supply foreign aid to different countries. Canada is the same way. Like, our government is in crazy amounts of debt, and you see commercials for it all the time. Canadians are saying, you know, Justin Trudeau wouldn't balance the budget, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, part of our expenses as a country is providing foreign aid. So, you know, I think people need to make a decision on what exactly it is that they want. Do they want, you know, do we want to be taxed more and pay more money to help other countries? Do we want to be taxed more to repay our own country's debts? Like, it's a very complicated situation.
So, Brandon, you raised a great point of taxation. And I just want to give a shout out to our Scandinavian homies on how, just how well put together it just seems. As a Canadian citizen, it just seems like a lot is going right over there. And, you know, like, specifically just on the topic of climate change, right? Like, we see prevalence of electric vehicles, taxation being higher, but, you know, social services and education being through the roof. Becoming, you know, vows and specific measurable goals to become like carbon neutral by certain dates. Like, entire countries are committing to these goals and sort of tactics to sometimes make sacrifices or progress in a sustainable way. And I think that's huge, right? And I think the challenge is a lot of people just aren't willing to even go that far, right? Like the idea, you know, it's the whole, Brian, you said it earlier, that, you know, we're living in a capitalist country. So the idea of government intervention to influence means of production and increase taxes for the betterment of the entire country in more of a socialist model, just...
Have
isn't flying here. But
have I told you, I can't remember if I shared this quote with you, but it was from a colleague of mine. And they put this so simply that it blew my mind, that there was a conversation about taxes happening at work. And, you know, a handful of people were upset. Some weren't. Some were happy with them. And this person just said, honestly, when you actually take all the BS away and all the politics, what we have to admit as a society is that taxes are the price of civilization. That without taxes, nothing would be built. Without taxes, no healthcare would exist. Without taxes, public transportation wouldn't be there. And so people always worried about taxes and being taxed too much. As long as you're not making, can I break this down really quick? Sorry, because taxes really frustrate me with people not being educated on them.
Finances with Brian.
So when you make a certain amount of money, there's various tax brackets. But so let's make this simple and say $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. And you get taxed 5%, 6%, 7%, 8% respectively. You only pay that extra tax on the amount of income that you make over that tax bracket. So if you made, say, $60,000, you would only pay the threshold of $1,000, or I guess $2,000, $1,001 to be above that $50,000, $59,000 threshold. So you only pay the extra amount of taxes on the amount of money that you make over each tax bracket. So this whole scam of people going around and talking to each other and saying, oh my God, I'm getting taxed like 50% because I make over six figures. Like, that's not true. Like, you don't understand how you're being taxed then, because that amount of money is not coming off your paycheck. B, that's not how it works. And you're just buying into this whole, typically it's a right-wing scare tactic of why taxes are bad. What else was I going to say? Oh, no, I don't know. I forgot.
Well, yeah, but I mean, essentially your point is like, you know, yes, taxes cost people money, you know, but they're important and they need to be there. And, you know, removing something like the carbon tax, you know, A, may save us some money, but B, the government's just going to put another tax on somewhere else that's going to be for the exact same amount of money and go to someplace else. Like,
when the carbon tax in Ontario, for example, an average consumer or like a family consumer gets the money back that they're taxed on at the gas station. Like, they get up to $800 a person back a year. And depending on how much you use, if you own your home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the people who are actually paying that tax and not getting the money back are those who are polluting the most. And folks who argue against the carbon tax don't fully understand how it's been implemented, because at the end of the day, the way that the plan that the federal government put in, because the Ontario government, the new provincial Ontario government, refused to actually implement a carbon tax plan, was one that has been given Nobel Peace Prizes for, that has said that this actually has a net positive impact on our, like, on our economy, as well as on our environmental footprint and decreasing our environmental impact. And so I'm like, really, at the end of the day, let's not make this like it's an everybody issue. And there's scientific proof of how we can go about as a society to tax our way, or to implement fees or charges or levies or whatever party you're with says it's something different. But at the end of the day, it's a tax to either change consumer behavior or to also have an impact on the way that big polluters / corporations are operating. From a financial perspective, it's creating disincentives for them to continuously invest in things that are negatively impacting our environment, because they will have to pay more.
Yeah.
And I just don't, like, I don't have the time to sit there and listen to somebody who isn't willing to recognize scientific proof that has, like, both from the economical perspective, but also from the environmental perspective, that this works. Like, it works. It works well.
I think that's the tough thing. For me, it just seems like there's such a lack of objectivity in all of these processes, right? There are people's individual values, conflicts of interest, all influencing this decision making. So it's being thrown way out of proportion, and people are literally, you know, choosing selfishly, right? Like,
The best way that I can sum it up, can't handle it. In terms of my frustration and the irony about this all, and I'm not a specific party follower. I don't have a political affiliation. I'm a fairly issues-based voter when I go to the polls. However, both provincially and federally, our conservative governments, our representatives, have been ripping apart the carbon tax for however many months, since January 1st. The federal conservatives just launched their plan for climate action. It has no details in it. It has no thresholds of financially what people are going to have to pay if they go above what their thresholds are that aren't outlined. They don't have any incentives or financial incentives for your average citizen. Example, green energy home. And lastly, they say that they're placing a levy on the top 1% of polluters. A levy is another name for a tax, and they've been bitching and complaining about the government taxing people for carbon emissions. And they've just gone around and done the same thing and just have called it something different and say that they're not taxing people. And I'm like, holy smokes. Like, we need to call this out and say what this really means, because at the end of the day, let's not kid ourselves. That 1% is going to increase all of our sticker prices when we go to the store. It's going to increase grocery store prices. It's going to increase restaurant goods, services, whatever that may be, because we're going to be the ones end up paying for it regardless, because that institution has to
come from somewhere,
and it comes from people who buy it. And yeah, that's us. Like, it doesn't matter. Right. And like, people aren't seeing that full picture of how we actually are impacted by it. And so like, from a political standpoint, for anybody listening, all I can say is like, make sure that you ask your representatives, if you're able to, if they have a serious plan about climate action and what that is and how they're going to stick to the international report and the recommendations of what Canada needs to do to meet our climate obligations. Because currently none of the political parties are actually committed to doing that. And it's smoke and mirrors, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a rant.
I mean, no, it's good. I mean, I'll never claim to be an expert.
Great.
An environment, and I'll never claim to be an expert in politics or, you know, to really truly know what's happening. And I do need to, and I, you know, I'll acknowledge I need to do a better job of doing my part as a citizen of Canada and like understanding the political environment and what everything means. But I think the baseline is that the more people start having these conversations, the better off we will be. And the more we start to acknowledge the challenges that we're facing, the better off we're going to be. And at the end of the day, that's all it is. Like, that's the baby step. That's the doing it poorly, is that's just opening a conversation and talking about these things and trying to understand a little bit more and asking questions and being confused and challenging our current challenges to try and find a solution.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Final thoughts, question for you. What would you be willing to change about your personal lifestyle moving forward? Like, in terms of, like, and this can be in the future, like, assuming, you know, you're in a position where you can make some of these changes, but in terms of, like, type of vehicle driven, diet, like, some of those things that we know have an impact. Like, would you consider driving a hybrid only?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I'm looking around my room right now, and you know, I'm realizing that I'm so bad with paper. And, you know, like, a lot of my articles that I want to read or that I'm reading, I'll print off. Right. And, you know, these are like 10 to 20 page articles, and I'll print off, you know, maybe 10 at a time. And it's awful. But it's like, it's my learning style and it's my reading style. Like, I prefer to read, a hard copy. And I just find that I can't stare at a screen for that long to read, you know, that many articles over and over and over again. So I think, you know, maybe not printing everything off is maybe not the solution, but I think I need to find a different solution, to reading these articles, and maybe it's going to find the physical journals that they came in and reading them there, like copies that have already been printed instead of reprinting my own. You know, I use a lot of post-it notes. My wall is covered in post-it notes of just ideas and stuff like that, but that's all paper. And maybe there's a way that I can start doing that on the computer instead and jotting down my ideas. You mentioned like diet. Like, I think diet is something that people forget to acknowledge a lot, and how much the meat industry has an impact on the environment. Is that a was that a punny cow noise? Because ironically,
no, that was like, yes, good point, like good acknowledgement, you know, like, but that's funny.
I like, you know, I have been definitely trying to eat less meat in terms of a health point, but also, you know, reducing your carbon footprint, it goes a long way. And just not buying as much meat. Yeah, I think those are probably the things that I'll look to do.
Yeah. I think for me, one big thing that I've already tried to start doing is I try to cycle to work more often, bike to work. And even like to the climbing gym and other places that I'm able to locally. Because A, it's making me healthier as a person, but also I don't have to burn gas in my car to go and do that. So I think that's something super small that is becoming more acceptable and actually probably safer with the amount of bike lanes that are getting created. And then the second one, the second one is, it's funny because it's not actually really helping the environment, but it's getting out and enjoying the environment more often, so that you're staying in touch with nature, so that you kind of recognize what you appreciate, if that makes any sense. Like, we're at a cottage this weekend, and like, I tried not to use any red cups. Like, I brought my Nalgene, was filling it up, brought cans of beer. Like, we loaded the empties up in people's car to bring home so that they didn't get thrown out in the garbage. Like, little things like that, that just, like, I think 5 years ago, I really wouldn't have thought of. I would have just said, throw them out, who cares?
Can I touch on that for a second? I was thinking about that too. The worst part about, you know, trying to get out and enjoy nature more is that a lot of the, you know, more beautiful places, like I'm in Edmonton, right? So if I want to go to some beautiful places, I have to go to Jasper and Banff. Well, the only way to get there is to drive or to fly, right? So, I mean, the irony is that I'm burning 7 hours of gas there and back just to try and get to Jasper.
Yeah.
To appreciate the environment. And there's no other way to get there, you know, other than using transportation. And I could, you know, look at using an electric vehicle, but there's also, you know, a footprint there as well. Anyways, Graham, what are your ideas?
So I'm definitely going to try to continue with the diet changes that I have made. I have yet to set a goal in terms of like what that next step would look like, but ultimately, I'm at least open to the idea of limiting to the point where, like, I would try to be vegetarian for a while or something like that. Even just as a challenge, right? Just to just for variety in that sense. Something else, and like, obviously, this is sort of back-ass words, just because it's a very consumer-focused approach, and so like very much ironic given our conversation about the environment, but to have an electric car in the future, I think definitely will make sense for me at some point. And so I'm really just looking forward to when that might be. Obviously, preference is a Tesla, but anything will do. And then something else that I've been looking into more and more is just like carbon offset projects and that sort of thing, to actually try to be personally much closer to net neutral moving forward. So companies and organizations like Bullfrog Power in I think now in all of Canada, I know for sure in Ontario, where you know, you do pay a little bit more monthly for your bills, but all of the energy that you use is sourced from sustainable renewable sources. When you fly, you can choose to pay more to purchase carbon offsets to balance out the impact of your flight in the environment. And I think that's something that I'm going to try to do just because, and I realize that, right? But I guess, you know, given, you know, this entire sort of really doomsday conversation that we've been having for this past little bit, it seems like that's a, you know, if I can afford the first big chunk of money to fly in the first place, I should probably try to budget or afford to less that's that a great impact. Point. So those are my ideas.
I like it.
Any time for some talk about some Kawhi Leonard news?
Oh, we always got time for Kawhi time.
Yeah, I guess we haven't really talked about the Raptors because the last podcast we had was during, what, Game 5?
Game 5.
When Brian was sneakily watching in the background.
I was full out. I was open about it.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, big ups for the Raps. Taking the whole thing. Winning the NBA championship.
Yeah, it's exciting for the country.
It's big for the country. I mean, you know, somebody made a point. Might even be my dad. Like, people are excited about the Raptors when they're winning. Right? And it's just like such totally. Typical bandwagon mentality. And you capitalize on the fact that the entire country can jump on board because, you know, there is only one NBA team in Canada. And it's like nobody on that team is Canadian except for Chris Boucher, but I don't think he played at all in the NBA Finals. So anyways, that's my little rant. But no, does Kawhi stay? What do you think?
I've always been an optimist. And so I felt like there was a chance pretty much throughout the entire season. Obviously, I feel more justified about that chance at this moment compared to, you know, in November or something. I think the Raptors have done everything in their power pretty much to create the circumstances in which he would be open to stay. And so for that, I'm definitely, you know, I'm at peace. And with that said, to answer your question, I think he'll stay. I think it'll be a short-term deal. I don't think it's going to be a 5-year supermax, but I could see like a 1+1 or a 2+1 give Kawhi that 10-year veteran status for then that next mega deal to send him into the towards the end of his career, and you know, appeal to, like you said, the entire country that is completely behind him. You know, like there are people now saying like if you see Kawhi, like, don't address him or like cheer him or like ask for an autograph or picture at all. Like just like let him live his life in Toronto. Like just try to like piss off.
Piss
like,
off, mate.
Don't make him feel special. Like yeah, piss off, mate. Let him do his thing. So, you know, like there's all of this conflicting ideas and themes on still like ways to get Kawhi to stay with the Kawhi and dine method and everything else too. But what do you think, Brent?
Did you say Brandon or Brian? Oh, sorry. I heard Brandon. Ryan, and I was like, sorry. Why isn't he talking? I really don't understand how he doesn't stay, to be honest. They won a championship. He was put on a load management program that helped him battle through an injury in the playoffs, the same injury that he was out in the season for. He got to play the style of game that he wanted. Even Lowry and other players adjusted their type of play and their tempo to meet him. He's going to get a supermax. They'll take him for whatever amount of years that he wants. Like, I really don't see the positive of going anywhere else. And right now, with my limited knowledge of basketball, I see Golden State being competitive next year if they can sign who they need to sign. I can see the Lakers, depending on what they do in free agency. And my boy Giannis Antetokounmpo. I traveled to Greece. It's not a big deal. Where, like, they will do another solid run in the regular season again and might be able to get it done in the playoffs. But, like, I don't know where else he would go. And none of those teams have enough money to pay him. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the big thing is, like, everyone's just talking about
yes.
They're talking about the Clippers positioning themselves well to be that team to welcome Kawhi and have that quieter market than the LA Lakers lights, but still accommodate him because LA is pretty much home for Leonard in SoCal. Correct. There in California. And I think a lot of that value that that team has to offer them is outside of what the Raptors can control. So that's why I'm pretty much going to be content either way, because I think everything the Raptors have done can happen. But like, does Kawhi like winter? Yeah, I really hope so, because, you know, that's something that's going to exist here no matter what. But if he doesn't like the snow, the Clippers are a great choice for him, sort of thing.
Yeah, you know? I get that. But, I mean, I don't know. However, on a side note, how confusing was it when he went to the Jays game on Friday? Did anybody else see that? Well, he went to a Jays game where they were playing LA.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's exactly.
Take a photo of Mike
Trout. Who are you cheering for? Who are you there to support?
Oh, I mean, professional athletes do that.
No, I'm just kidding. But it was funny. They're like, he's at a Jays game.
That is funny, though.
Oh, my God, he's staying. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait, they're playing LA. Uh-oh, maybe he's going.
Brandon, yeah,
I don't know. I'm kind of with you, Graham. I think he signs a 1-1.
Really?
You know, there's nowhere better for him next year. So I think he goes the 1 year max and then a player option and then reevaluates after that. I think I can see him leaving when Masai Ujiri leaves. I think it's time for Masai to move on. And, you know, like the Wizards are trying to pay him like $60 million to go and rebuild their franchise. So like, you know, and that's kind of what Masai does. He moves from one franchise to another until they become extremely successful. And like, then he moves on to another project and rebuilds them. Like, I can kind of see them parting ways at the same time.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, Brian made a good point. Like, the East isn't getting any weaker. And, you know, if Kevin Durant and Kyrie, you know, do go out East, then it's only going to make it more difficult for the Raps to repeat getting all the way to the NBA Finals. And you make a good point. Like, you know, where is Kawhi going to have a better shot of competing for a championship again next year? Mm-hmm. And I think it's still Toronto.
I think it's Toronto.
Right? And maybe they get another piece in the offseason, a smaller bench piece, because their bench was pretty weak. You know, maybe they get a better backup guard, or, you know, another starting wing to play with him. And, you know, they reload and re-up for next year. But yeah, I think the 1-1 is probably the most likely, and then they go from there.
I'm interested to see what he actually signs for, because like all of the reports have come out that he's been super, super frugal with his, like, financially. What was it, up until like 3 years ago, he was still driving a 1994 Chevy Tahoe.
Bronco.
Yep.
It was a Bronco?
Yeah.
Ford Bronco. Sorry. Like, that's crazy. You don't see any other player in arguably any other professional sport doing that, other than a really, really nice old car that they like to drive around. But his wasn't nice. Sure. Like,
no, is he gonna, it was a beater. It was his first car.
Is he going to compromise on money? Because does that actually matter to him? Like, does the Supermax really have an impact on his decision?
I mean, I don't think he's out looking for money, but I think he wants to be fairly compensated.
Absolutely.
And I don't think the Raps wouldn't lowball him either.
No, I don't. I think they're offering Supermax to keep him.
No, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if another team comes back and says, here's what we can afford.
Right.
Will that.
Yeah, because the max that different teams can give him is different.
Yes. It's not, and like, I would be interested to see what he accepts if he goes somewhere else and for what amount of money. But if he stays with Toronto, he's not getting anything less than the Supermax with Toronto. They'd be dumb not to offer it to him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they already have.
So yeah. I agree. Yeah, I agree. But to your point about Leonard's like sort of fiscal nature, I wonder if he would at all be open to taking a very team-friendly deal.
Maybe.
In order to run it back and sign a couple pieces to just, a Golden State sort of situation.
I think they do it like Golden State, and they sign a bunch of guys for a lot of money, and they pay the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the model. I don't think it's about, you know, I don't think you really have to talk guys into sacrificing. It's like, you know, if the organization really wants to win, they have to pay the luxury tax. And that's just that simple. Like, the Warriors are talking about re-signing Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, which would put them in the like repeater tax, which is enormous amounts. But the organization makes so much money that owners don't care.
Yes.
They're just like, we'll pay the tax. We'll be way over the cap. And, yeah.
Yeah, because that's paying Durant the max to watch and rehab
and Thompson,
for the season.
Both of them.
And neither pretty of them much are going to be able to play next year.
I think Thompson will play.
His ACL. Well,
I think they were talking about Thompson like getting back in March and stuff.
Okay, so basically for the whole season.
Yeah, I know. But you know,
you never, some
are
people
be back in the playoffs.
Come back from crazier injuries and faster.
That's true. And stronger. Right? Like Westbrook is a prime example of like somebody bounced back and didn't really miss a step or even got better.
Eric Carlson in hockey when he got his Achilles cut. Like he was back in what, 3.5, 4 months? When that was supposed to be a 10-month injury.
That's a good point.
Like,
I mean, hockey players are a different breed, though.
I mean, look at me. I got surgery on my shoulder. I was 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
Iron Man champ. Well, on that note,
the towel feds to offer you the Superman.
We can't afford it. Alrighty, folks.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's it for us. As always, you can get in touch with us multiple ways. Email thatsointerestingpod@gmail.com or on Instagram @TSIPodcast. Gentlemen, final thoughts?
Get out there and save the environment.
My thoughts exactly.
Get out there and play in a local area that you don't need to drive to or take any kind of motor transportation to, and play in that area.
I like it.
Thanks again, guys.
Kids.